And welcome to the program again this weekend. I'm Frank Rush, being joined today with Bianca Gamble and Marcia Miller joins us today. They were for the Vigo County League of Women Voters. Ladies, how you doing today?
Fine, thanks.
Fantastic.
So we've got a special event coming up. Tell us, one of you pick, which one wants to tell us about the event that's coming up here real quick within the next weekend or so?
Well, on Monday, August 27th, we will be having our annual Women's Equality Day March. And we rendezvous on the ISU parking lot G, and then we march around campus and have we have guest speakers at the beginning and guest speakers at the end, and it's at close to the fountain on ISU campus.
Okay, and the event is to commemorate.
It's to commemorate the 19th Amendment. 19th.
And for all those who didn't take their history lesson. Which are some people going, was that the one where we could drink again? Was that it?
No, it's not that one. No. Well, what we're doing, we're celebrating, educating people on the 19th Amendment, and that's when women gained the right to vote.
All right. Marcia, tell us a little bit more about the history on this. Take us back to when the amendment was passed and what all went into actually getting it passed, because this was not an easy task in the day.
It only took 72 years, Frank. We date it from 1848, the Seneca Falls Convention in New York. And although I recently discovered a quote from Abraham Lincoln in the, I believe, 1840s, where he sort of intimated that perhaps men and women should both be able to vote. But the concept of women having the vote went along from 1872 with a few successes and a lot of setbacks, and a lot of women and men indicating that women should vote. Some of the Western territories, especially Wyoming, when Wyoming became a state, a lot of people got very excited because women got the vote when they became a state. And if you find some historical maps, which are very interesting, if you look on Google Images, they've got some great maps showing the progress of women's suffrage, which basically went from west to east. And then things kind of died down quite a bit and picked back up in the early 20th century. And one of the things that kind of happened around the time, sort of a second or third wave of momentum, was that people began to march. There were a lot of famous marches in favor of women voting, a lot of them in New York, but basically everybody somewhere, sometime was marching. And then there was a huge march as President Wilson was coming to be president. Alice Paul and some people who were taking a slightly more robust approach to getting women the vote. There were kind of some warring factions. Some people said, let's do it state by state. Some people said, no, we need a federal amendment. And so Alice Paul and her crew in Washington, D.C. had recently settled in, and they said, you know, we need to march. And the perfect time to march is the day before President Wilson gets inaugurated as president. And they had, and think about it, in those days, how you got people organized. No internet.
Yeah.
No texting. They had thousands of women and men marching in waves. There were the educated women and the farming women and the industrial women and the textile worker women. It was incredible. And it literally stopped traffic. And then for a while, the march itself actually got stopped because some people felt that perhaps that wasn't a good idea. But the march did continue. And then we continued a little farther to the Silent Sentinels, who picketed the White House every single day, come rain, come shine, until they famously, some of them got arrested for, I believe it was blocking traffic on the sidewalk, and got hauled into jail, and some of them got force-fed. And it was really quite, again, a time when you might think women were sort of quietly going about this, but no. A lot of that was really, really kind of intense. And finally, President Wilson said, well, of course I'm in favor of suffrage. Yes, I don't know where you would have gotten the idea that I wasn't in favor of it before. And so off they went to a federal amendment. ratification, and then a huge historical event, which is focusing on Tennessee and hot August 1920. And it wasn't expected. It was they were looking at Tennessee as probably the final state was going to make that ratification possible. A recent book called The Women's Hour is nothing about the approximately 6 to 8 weeks of intense women and men pro-suffrage, anti-suffrage, descending on Tennessee, and women going into the hills to find the legislators because, of course, they weren't meeting in August, and trying to drag them back and have meetings. And it all turned on the vote of one man who received a note from his mother. He was a red rose wearer. The people pro-suffrage wore yellow. The anti-suffrage people wore red. When he entered the state legislature of Tennessee, he was wearing a red rose. And he got literally a note from his mother who said, "Vote for suffrage." And he was a good boy, young man, in his 20s still. He did not get tarred and feathered after the vote, but things got a little tense.
He did have to flee, though, out the back door.
He kind of had to leave in a hurry. And then they put that ratified document literally on the train, and there were people still trying to block it because it had to get up to Washington for the final signature. And it came in the dead of night. And I can't remember his name. The person who basically signed off on it, he signed off on it early in the morning with no one around. So these days, whenever anybody signs anything, they're always surrounded by people. And some of the earlier pictures, as they went through the states, were surrounded. He signed it at 8:00. And that was just great. And then 20 million women were ready to vote hopefully in that next election.
One of the things that you guys want to bring up is just to kind of remind people what it was like back then. And how hard is that? Because, I mean, today it just seems like, my goodness, what dark ages are you talking about here? It really wasn't all that long ago when you think about it. But today, nowadays, to think that women can't vote, I mean, it's just almost unimaginable to most people nowadays.
Well, I think because this is the 98th year that women have been given the right to vote. And Marcia covered it quite well about how the Western states women had the right to vote before the Eastern or Midwest states, but the idea of, you know. I think in this day and age, it's kind of like, well, we've always had the right to vote. When you look back at history, if you were, if you did not own property, even a white man could not vote. So, I mean, it's the evolution of our gaining the right to vote has had a lot of bumps and bruises and trials and tribulations all along the way. And, you know, just even with Marcia's recount of Alice Paul and the demonstrations and the protest out in front of the White House and being incarcerated, and their way to be heard was a hunger strike. Well, we don't even think about that now. We do have protests and marches, but this is a march to commemorate that 19th Amendment being ratified and how you go out through and you talk to the younger people and you know, there was a point in time when you had to be 21 to vote. Now it's 18.
Although I'm not sure how many people that are 18 actually do go out and vote nowadays.
Growing numbers of people. One of the things that's kind of interesting is you can register to vote at age 17 in Indiana as long as you're going to be 18 on election day.
Right.
And so the league and the NAACP locally have been going into the high schools to register students to vote. And that's been fairly successful for several years. And then we hope they become informed voters, not at just the federal level, but also at the state and local level as well.
Right. Marcia Miller and Bianca Gamble with the Vigo County League of Women Voters are guests today. So just to kind of refresh folks of the history lesson on this, Why? What were the reasons behind not wanting women to vote? Because the argument went on back then for quite a while. And obviously we can say, well, of course, we understand why they should. But now, what were the arguments to prevent women from voting?
Well, there are some great ones, actually. First of all, women were too pure.
Too delicate.
Politics was nasty, dirty business. And
well, they had right.
Well, yeah. With or without women.
As far as politics being a nasty business, yeah, they had that part right.
A woman named Victoria Woodhull in 1876 actually ran for president. So there were even women interested to do that. There was a concept among a lot of people. There were a couple of things going on, one of which was, speaking of prohibition, people were really worried that if more women started mucking about in politics at an official level, that this would kind of screw up men wishing to imbibe. A lot of women who were abolitionists were also suffragists. A lot of women who were temperance were also suffragists. But those were also independent movements kind of going on and kind of fighting amongst each other. But there was the concept of men's sphere. The men's spheres were business and politics, and the woman's spheres were, of course, family and home.
Domestic.
And a woman did not need to vote, because if she was going to vote, well, she would vote exactly like her husband anyway, so why should she have an independent vote? Now, we look at that, and there are other instances of that, but those are kind of, there are even songs, so many songs that were written for the suffragist cause. A lot of them to the tune of the Battle Hymn of the Republic, to rouse people up, and they would talk about women's sphere. And so again, it would sully the woman too if they became involved in politics. Mm.
Well, of course, it's certainly an education to go back and take a look at the way things were. Now, the march is coming up when, and you're going to have some speakers there and a few other things going on. So tell us what the day is going to be like.
So the march, we usually try to keep it close to the August 26th actual date, but that occurs on a Sunday this year. So our march will be Monday, August 27th. It's a pre-march rally, starts at 5:15 in parking lot G, which is just north of the Ballyhoo.
Okay.
So you can find it there.
So you can go in by before you march then, which is, if you'd like.
I'm sure they would appreciate that.
Yeah.
But we have a list of speakers before. We always invite the mayor to open up the ceremony. Mm. And then we have the reading of the 19th Amendment. And we have some guest speakers. We have a young lady who will be joining us again this year. She gave her own, she created her own poem, her own works, and her name is Destiny Chavers. She's an ISU student, and it was really moving, her own, what do you want to call it?
Poem. It's kind of a spoken poem.
Poem, yeah.
Well, spoken text.
Yeah.
It was very powerful, and we invited her to come back again this year, especially because we have a sort of special focus this year. And every year since we started doing this, which was 2012, we've tried to do something that was a little bit different. A couple of years ago, we added living history badges. One of the members of the steering committee, Crystal Reynolds, said, you go to a museum and you get a little badge and you're a person in that badge. And so I created a set of Hoosier suffragist badges, which has been quite well received. Well, as we were starting to talk about the plans for this year, it was advertised that this year was also the 100th anniversary of the founding of the Terre Haute NAACP. And so it seemed like a perfect thing to do to add to the league's commemoration of the this event, to talk about and emphasize the NAACP, and of course that also meant stretching the history of voting rights from the 14th and 15th Amendments all the way to the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And one of the things, unfortunately, about the passage of the 19th Amendment is a lot of the two organizations that were working on it, because of certain southern states and their attitudes and opinions, kind of threw African Americans under the bus, and African American women were really often not welcome in those groups. But that did not stop them from being suffragists, being club women, being educators, and really doing things. So I've created a new set of living history badges this year of national suffragists. And then Dr. Crystal Reynolds has researched several local African Americans who were active in the suffrage movement, some of them who were Indiana State students when in 1913 they formed the Equal Suffrage Society. And so we have a special guest coming from Indianapolis who was very active in the NAACP in Terre Haute for many years, called her name is Clara Walton. And so, and we hope that Destiny's poem will kind of emphasize some of those elements as well. So we're celebrating lots of things, including also just the fact that it is nationally Women's Equality Day. There was no event like that until 1973. President Nixon was the first person after the joint resolution passed the House, introduced by New York Representative Bella Abzug and her co-sponsors, to make this. And I had to laugh when I was researching that, because in 1973, Richard Nixon's doing the proclamation. Richard Nixon was kind of paying attention to other things at the time. ERA was trying to be ratified. We were just starting Watergate, but it was also Women's Equality Day.
And the event happens on what day?
Monday, August 27th, 5:15. We start marching at 6 p.m., and we'll end up at the DD Plaza near the fountain. And if you can't walk, we do have a mode of transportation so people can ride. But we will have guest speakers at the end. We have Dana Black coming from Indianapolis as well.
Website for any more details and stuff?
The easiest thing to do would be to look for the Women's Equality Day March in Terre Haute on Eventbrite.
All right. Thank you very much, Marcia Miller and Bianca Gamble from the Vigo County League of Women Voters. I'm Frank Rush. Thanks for being with us this weekend.